Bubbles was a long story, but the island is just made up of what? However, no, I have a snow for this project. We're doing this in a quad, and I need to hear about snow for it. William, I actually have to buy it. I never picked it up.
All right, everyone. Start with attendance here. I'm just going to confirm. I believe we do have a quorum. We're missing a few people. It's the start here because the candidates meeting for the council elections is happening right now. So if you're supposed to be there, go there. President Larson.
Here.
Vice President Badengar.
Present.
Vice President Brown.
Here.
Vice President Ripka.
Present.
Vice President Bourgeois. Governor Flannan.
Present.
Councilor Lynn.
Yeah.
Councilor Anderson.
Yeah.
Councilor Rates.
Here.
Councilor Malale.
Here.
Councilor Hosseini. Councilor Bilak.
Here.
Councilor Kunnar.
Here.
Councilor Lee.
Here.
Councilor Hussein.
Yep.
Councilor Stack. Councilor C. Councilor Ansari is in the live stream. Councilor Yao. I saw Councilor Yao earlier. There's none. Councilor Rosalie. Councilor Bose. Councilor Adwan. Councilor Hennessey. There's Councilor Yao. Councilor Chung. Councilor Ahmad. Councilor Sunday. Councilor Nguyen. Councilor Azuki is in the live stream. Proxy for Councilor Hadouche.
Here.
Councilor Kim.
I'm here.
Councilor DePinto. Councilor Everwall.
Here.
Councilor Rizvi. Oh. Councilor Bruce.
Here.
Councilor Belcourt. And we're good. Oh, sorry about that. Doing a live stream. I forgot to turn that on. Sorry about that. It was a live stream. It should work now. We'd like to respectfully acknowledge that our university and our students' union are located on Treaty 6 territory. We represent the Cree, Dene, Soto, Métis, Blackfoot, and Nakota Sioux territories, specifically the ancestral space of the Papoose Chase Cree. These nations are our family, friends, faculty, staff, students, and peers. As members of the University of Alberta Students' Union, we honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship. We aspire for our learning, research, teaching, and governance to acknowledge and work toward decolonization of Indigenous knowledge and traditions. I'm not sure. Councillor Sunday is not here. Anyone else know if we have the supplies and someone's going to be facilitating the smudging?
No.
No one? Okay. So we'll move to speaker's business. The next meeting of the Students' Council will take place on Tuesday, March 26th, back here in Council Chambers. I will special order the one item from the late additions onto the main agenda. And as well, I would like to extend my congratulations to all of you who ran in the recent executive elections. Running in those elections is a big feat, as anyone who's running them knows. Whether or not you were successful is, in my opinion, besides the point, you put yourself out there, you made the effort to try and work for students, Those of you who were successful, congratulations to you. And I hope to see all of you back next year in some capacity, in some way. And council elections. I know the people who are running for council are not here this evening, so good on them. I will do this once they get here as well. Just so everyone knows, my job will be open next year as well. If you have questions about that, come talk to me. All right, so that is all I have for speakers. We'll begin with presentations. So there's no room to allow presentations from the University President, David Turpin, to talk with President. President Turpin will visit Students' Council for a brief talk, followed by a Q&A session. Is there a second for this presentation? President Larson, thank you very much. Any opposition to receiving this presentation? Seeing none, President Turpin.
Great. Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to be here. And what I want to do today is I want to speak for about 10 or 15 minutes on an issue that's going to affect us all. And then I'm going to open it up to questions on that or anything else that you've got. I have to leave around 6:30 because I've got another function that I've got to get to. So I think we're all aware that we're facing both a provincial and a federal election this year. Sometime in the next couple of months, we will have a provincial election. And what I want to do is share with you the three priorities that the 26 post-secondary institution presidents have unanimously agreed on going into this election. One of the things that you will have a lot more flexibility than I will during, once the writ is dropped and during the election campaign, is actually speaking out on behalf of yourselves as individuals about some of the issues that are in play. Universities and other public sector institutions are sort of chilled a bit in terms of what we cannot say, can and cannot say during election campaign, as you can understand. But the 26 presidents have got together, and over the last year or so, have worked very, very hard to come up with some key priorities, and there's three of them. And I'll start each of them with a bit of an observation. So the first one is the capacity of the system, the number of students that we can actually house in the total post-secondary system, not just the U of A, but all 26 institutions. If you look at Alberta, and you look at the statistics, we have the lowest participation rates in post-secondary education in Canada, right at the bottom. Every other province has higher levels of participation in post-secondary institutions of young people going from high school into those institutions. Interesting irony here. If you sample the Alberta population, we actually have the highest educational attainment in the country. So how do you reconcile those two things? Well, it's simple. We pay people money to move here, and the people we pay to move here are people with education. So if you were to look at the system today and ask, how's it working? Well, the ministry itself indicates that about 17,000 students today, 17,000 students in Alberta, qualified students do not get access to post-secondary institutions because they're full. The universities, the colleges are basically full, with the exception of those out in some of the rural municipalities. If you were to make the observation and say, we want to be at the national average today in terms of participation rates, we would have to add about 47,000 spaces to the post-secondary institutions in this province. Some to the U of A, some to Lethbridge, some to Calgary, some to Grand Prairie. We would have to grow the system instantly, 47,000 spaces overnight to simply become average. Now, the other challenge we've got in Alberta is we have the largest youth population, the most rapidly growing youth population in the country. We're a young province. And because we can't grow that capacity instantly, if we set the goal of being average by 2045, we would have to add just another 40,000 seats just to accommodate population growth. So that adds up to about 90,000 spaces would have to be added to the system by 2025 so that we can have average participation rates. The number one priority of the presidents of this province is to see the system grow to allow qualified students a place that they can study. So that's number one, and I'd like you to join me in advocating for that. The second deals with affordability. If you look at the student financial aid program in the province of Alberta, and I'm just pulling up the figure here, we have, if you look at the percentage of provincial student financial aid that is non-repayable, in other words, comes in the form of student grants, that's money that students really, really need. Those individuals that require significant resources in order to come to university or college need grants. If they're given loans, there's an aversion. They're afraid to take on debt. We in this province have the lowest percentage of student financial aid in the form of non-repayable student grants of any of the provinces. Only about 20% of the money coming from the province as part of the student financial aid program is in non-refundable grants. If you look at Quebec, it's 51%. If you look at Ontario, it's 65% is in the form of grants. If you look at New Brunswick, it's 50%. So we are significantly lower. The students that need it most are not getting access to the student financial supports that they require. So our next priority is to revamp the student financial aid system so those students in greatest need get access to the financial resources they need in order to participate in secondary education. The third point that we've all agreed on is the importance of innovation and research. Universities in particular are the idea creators. We come up with the ideas and the innovations that power social, cultural, and economic development. If you look at the incredible record here in Alberta in the energy sector, the first patent to come out for the removal of heavy oil from the oil sector was done here at the University of Alberta. And thousands of more innovations occurred here that now power a multi-billion dollar energy sector. In order for us to move forward, we need that innovation. We need that research. And the third priority is to see this province perform at a level that really leads the country in terms of innovation and research. And part of that is providing work-integrated learning experiences for students so that students can go from the classroom into business and industry settings, learn about the challenges that are there, and then come back and bring those ideas back into the classroom to support that sort of innovation continuum. So the three priorities that we've set, the first is to grow the capacity of the system. The second is to revamp the student financial aid system so that students that need grants get the grants. And the third is to see us perform in the area of innovation and research at the leading edge of the country. So those are the three things that every post-secondary president has stuck their hand up and said, I agree with those. And we want to make sure that regardless of how the election turns out, that those are the priorities that government is working to fulfill. So I'm here tonight to ask you to join us in advocating for those three initiatives. I think they're timely. I think as a province, given the economic situation that we're in, we need young people to get the educations they need so that they can get the jobs and help diversify the economy, as we all know has to happen. I think we need the resources for students so that financial barriers are not an issue. And I think we need the resources to flow to researchers so that they can create the ideas we need to power the new economy. So I think what I'll do is I'll stop there. You can ask questions about what I've spoken about or anything else. And I think that gives us about 10 or 15 minutes for conversation. All right. Over to you guys. Yes?
Has there been any progress with the development of the Musqua House?
So Musqua House remains one of the institution's top physical facility priorities. So Musqua House, as I'm sure you're all aware, would be a first peak
house on campus that would allow us to bring together many of the programmatic elements of what we've been doing, developing over the last number of years. It remains our priority. Government priorities at this point are retrofitting buildings and not funding new space. So we continue to make the case for this. We will continue, as we go forward, to argue for funding of Musselwhite House. And anytime any of you get the opportunity to speak to anyone in government, I would encourage you to do so and advocate for this facility.
So does that mean that there's been progress on it, though, or is it still like the same? Like, is there
There's been no change in the message from government over the last year on the funding for Musselwhite House. Yes?
Thank you. This is not entirely related to the priorities that you outlined, but I was wondering, on the topic of central administration costs, while I know that having costs of U of A have grown in a pretty restrained way in comparison to some other comparative institutions, I was wondering, just for the benefit of council, you could tell us a bit about the measures that your office or that administration is taking to control central administration costs.
Well, I can give you a. Let me give you a micro example, then I'll go to a macro example. So, micro example: when I arrived in my office, I think there were. Let me do the count. I think 8 full-time staff, and now we're down to. Five and a half. So we are leading by an example and, you know, looking for efficiencies. Let me move to the macro level. One of the biggest challenges we have in quantifying administrative costs is, what do we mean by that? So, for example, if you just simply look at central expenditures, that would include allocations for student mental health. It would include allocations for the Dean of Students. It would include many of our indigenous initiatives. And those would be captured in administrative costs because they're not costs that are embedded in a faculty. But when we count those central costs, what we miss are the faculty, the costs of administration in the faculties. So, for example, student recruitment. We do student recruitment both centrally out of the registrar's office, but also out of faculty offices as well. So when we capture the central cost, but we don't capture the faculty cost. So one of the things we're doing in order to try and get a holistic view of this is we've joined an international group of institutions that do rigorous administrative expenditure benchmarking. And we're investing a lot of money. There were surveys that went out earlier this year, or sorry, would have been late last year, looking at issues around services and administration. And as we move into that, we will end up with excellent benchmark data that looks at both faculty expenditures and central expenditures and benchmarks us against other institutions. So we can say, you know, we are spending more on this than other institutions, but our satisfaction levels are much higher. Or we're spending more on this particular function than other institutions, and our satisfaction levels are terrible. Likewise, we're spending less, but we're doing well. And then we will be able to make informed decisions on how better to control administrative costs. Good question. Yes, Joel.
Thanks for the presentation. I'm excited to know that, or excited to hear that research and innovation is the top three. Priorities.
And I would say those are not in order of priority. They just had to be in, you know, you write it and, you know, here's number one, number two, number three. So I wouldn't say that it's third priority. You know, some people would say it's number one and others would say, you know, maybe it is number three. I say they're all important.
Knowing that the University of Alberta is one of the top 5 universities in Canada, very research intensive, what, in your mind, what are some of the gaps that are, I guess, hindering us from being at the top? Because I know that we slipped from being in the top 100, I think it was last year. So what are some gaps that
are there? Well, one of the challenges, so much of the federal funding is dependent upon matching funds from the province. So Canada Foundation for Innovation, you want $100,000, they'll give you $40,000. and they say, okay, you've got to get 40 from the province and 20 from the private sector. And we cannot have any problems getting the 20 from the private sector. The challenge can be getting the match from the province. So one of the key things is ensuring that we have adequate matching funding for federal initiatives, whether that is through the CFI, whether it's through potential work-study programs that may be coming forward. And so we've always argued to not leave unmatched money on the table in Ottawa, because that is a key issue. So if you were to ask me what would be one of the most significant things we could do to see the research at this university flourish, and that would be to make sure that all of the resources that we're successful in competing for nationally and internationally that require matches get them. Yes?
Sorry, thank you so much for coming. I'm also on the Academic Planning Committee of GFC.
Yep.
So I've had the chance to go over some like the budget work and stuff like that.
Yep.
So with the provincial election coming up, like my guess is that the NDP will release a budget that they'll kind of run on in the election. I mean, maybe they won't, but I'm wondering if you were like a betting person, would that budget, do you think, contain like good news for universities, like increase Alberta campus grants and like fulfilling the promise of backfill funding, or do you think it'll be like neutral, or will it take away, do you think?
Well, I think we'd wait till if it's going to come out, it'll come out next week, and I won't have to gamble at all.
Speaking generically, having had experience in Ontario, BC, and Alberta, pre-election budgets always tend to be positive. That's been my experience.
So you talked about experiential learning, and I'm not the biggest fan of experiential learning. But the problem with that and the way it is, it's restricted to just more or less accessible to other students.
Yeah.
So what's the proposal for the to ensure more students get the value despite the restriction?
So one of the things we've been doing this year is really pushing federally for the launch of a work integrated learning program, a national one, that would require engagement at the provincial level. The budget comes down, the federal budget comes down next Tuesday. And so by Tuesday at this time, we should know whether the people have succeeded in there being a national program. If there's a national program, there probably will be a requirement for some sort of matching from the provincial sources. And I think that will go a long way into developing more spaces for students out in the private sector. And that will support work integration. So that's our strategy. That's how we've been working, and we'll find out next week whether it's a success. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation, Dave. I know you touched on this a bit at the Bob Jen Senate GFC Summit, but would you be able to explain to everybody why mental health funding isn't part of the COPOLA document?
Right. So. Mental health funding is really a component of the first pillar, which is the growing the capacity. And if you grow the capacity properly, there will be resources as part of that. So when you actually look at what the numbers, when you sit down and you say 90,000 spaces, that's equivalent to 2.5 universities of Alberta. Those are big, big numbers. And in that, would be a component of going to student mental health, going to libraries, going to, so that was, but you asked the same question at the summit, and I think I gave a very similar answer.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everybody
answers. Yeah, I thank you for doing that, I appreciate that. Yes. It would be a mixture of both. The
biggest barrier right now, the U of A has, we have a fair bit of space. If you compare us to other universities in the country, we have an awful, we are on the plus side of the amount of space we have per student. The limiting factor right now is operating funding. But, so you could grow enrollments a certain amount without any space, but then you get to a point where you do need your space. So, the capacity issue has to be solved in two ways. One is to increase the operating funding. So, you know, fund the growth in student population, and then in addition to that, there needs to be expenditures on capital. So renovation of old space, bringing it up to current standards, and construction of new space. So we have both of those. Yes?
So considering how often you heard from admin that the grants that you spoke about are not meant for international students, and then with your priority two that you explained that it's for to support the students that are in most in incredible financial need, how do you, like, considering that it's international students that are, I would say, are in incredible financial need, how do you reconcile those?
Really good question. One of the things that in this province, as in, I think, just about every other province that I'm aware of, international students are dealt with outside of the government operating grant, so to speak. So we are not expected to use government operating funding or domestic student tuition to subsidize international students, hence the elevated international student fee. So international students are expected to pay full cost of their education when they are here at the University of Alberta or at Lethbridge or at, you know, at Northwestern. So one of the things that is happening is that some of that resource goes into student financial assistance. So those students in highest need can get access to it. But international students are a unique population that we have to think about independently from the domestic students. And given the growth in demand by international students to come to the University of Alberta, it's going to become a more and more significant part of the student body in the years ahead. One of the things that you find most university presidents arguing is that international students profoundly enrich the value of the education of all students on campus. International students and their presence on campus really help leaven the environment so that even a student who doesn't travel abroad for education, a Canadian student, gets something of an international flavor simply by coming to campus. So we have to be very, very careful, and particularly at the graduate level, that we're not excluding talented students on the basis of their ability to pay.
So the affordability does not include, priority two in a sense.
So the provincial student grant program doesn't include international students. Yeah. So the province is clear about that. There are some other venues for accessing support, but the provincial student grant program is for Canadian students. Yes.
It's kind of like two parts. For like the capacity for qualified students. So with like that, with increasing capacity for qualified students, is that also address like the fact that educational disparities and gaps for rural communities and indigenous areas and stuff like that, and even like low socioeconomic areas also, is that include like the decreasing retention rate of indigenous students?
So let's deal with the rural and remote students. Huge challenges. And what I would imagine, if I were to imagine the perfect system, there would be some funding differentials available for rural and remote access. Because it does cost students who live in remote areas more to get a post-secondary education, just by...
Like, not like in terms of affordability, but in terms of like the like disparity in education quality, I guess, or like the fact that it's like, there's like a huge learning curve for children, or not children, sorry.
Yeah.
For students who come from schools that like maybe have like lower qualities or like in smaller communities, like it's like,
right.
You know, there's
So one of the things, I mean, if you look, so I can combine both of these, both of your points. So the, one of the things we run as interviewers that is our position year program for Indigenous students. So students that would have wouldn't have the requirements to get into the U of A, but they have the aptitude. And they may have gone to school where they haven't been able to pick up their math or their physics or what have you. So we have been funding a program where they can come here for a year, work to get their credits accumulated and their marks up, and at the same time they will take a couple of university courses. And if they successfully complete those, they then move into first year, but they can take those credits with them. So those sorts of programs that deal with those educational disparities are ones that would be funded out of that growth in system.
So then that growth capacity,
yeah,
with the qualifications and all of that will include, like, bridging
the gap. For me, it includes everything that we've got happening now, except we'd be able to do more of it. Yes?
When you talk about expanding our systems with the university, where would you say fits in, or how would you include satellite campuses in that expansion, specifically places like Campus Central or like the Augustana campus?
So when we've talked with the 26 post-secondary presidents, my comment to them is, let's grow the pie. If we're successful in growing the pie, then we can fight over how big a piece each of us get. When we can't grow the pie, there's no fight to be had. We're fighting over diminishing resources. So there hasn't been any decision as to, should Grand Prairie get more than Calgary, et cetera, et cetera. Likewise, at the U of A, we have not said, here is the one area that we would grow as opposed to this other. But specifically, one of the really unique differentiating characteristics of the University of Alberta is the fact that we do have five campuses. And we have Campus Saint-Jean, which is the only Francophone campus in Western Canada. Truly a unique environment. We have Augustana, which is a rural liberal arts college. And these allow us to differentiate ourselves from other institutions. They also provide an opportunity to serve some niches in this province that are not being served in any other way. We have put together a significant enrollment expansion plan for Campus Saint-Jean into the province. We haven't heard anything yet. I do know the province is working on a capacity growth model. And I know that this has been factored into that initiative.
So it's just after 6:30, so I'll take three really quick questions. Maybe we'll ask them 1, 2, 3, and then I can try and summarize. Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. So it's been peppered in throughout the discussion so far, I think, with approaching a problem like deferred maintenance. And so I'm interested, to my understanding, it would be within that first resolution, the first one you brought up. But obviously not naming it directly means that it might not be at the same level of priority for all the institutions. So what is that discrepancy for the U of A? Like, is it a much larger problem that you'd like to focus on when approaching number one specifically, or is it more in line?
Okay.
My question is, given the value that students need to provide, and as you said earlier, the provincial election is coming up, and there's this conversation swinging across Canada of student volunteer student union, and given that if you look at our students, you provide over 200 staff, which is part of the experiential learning value.
Yeah.
And given the fact that you came in to seek our opinions and inputs, so what position does the university take or stand towards this whole controversy?
Okay.
Mine wasn't a question. I'll let you answer.
Okay.
And I'll say my piece.
Okay, sure. So quickly, deferred maintenance is a huge issue. Ours is about $1 billion. It is very, very significant. Larger than any institutions in the province. Not surprisingly, we're the largest and we're the oldest. So by definition, we have older stuff that we have to take care of. One of the things that we are consistently lobbying for is a much more significant allocation to issues like deferred maintenance in the operating grant. If I argue for it, I'm going to want a much bigger piece of the pie, the resource to go to deferred maintenance, than Calgary, for example, that's a much newer institution. And the idea is, okay, we're not going to agree on what that allocation should be. Let's grow the pie, then we can argue about it. We are putting a lot of representations forward to increase the funding for maintenance. In terms of voluntary student union association and fees, the university presidents are opposed to that. We think that the student union movement in Canada is absolutely critical. You provide a whole series of services and activities for students that that are absolutely necessary for the effective operation of the university. I've not met a president in Ontario that supports it. They were gobsmacked when it happened. Every president in this province that I'm aware of supports the student fees as a mandatory fee. So there you have it. All right. Thanks very much. Thanks for the questions. Thanks for the conversation. And I really encourage you, as you get a chance to talk with people over the coming months, to not be shy. I know you're not. And step up and say, we've got to grow the system capacity. We need to revamp the student financial aid piece, and we need to invest in research and innovation in this province. All right. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Governor Flynn.
I just wanted to thank you, Dr. Durbin, again, for accepting our invitation. In my 4 years on this body, we have another president join us at one of our meetings. And as my time in student governance winds down, I felt it appropriate to invite, and thanks for coming. I know due to time constraints, we may not have answered every question. So if there were any that were missed, would you be opposed to me gathering some and bringing them to you later?
Sure. Yeah. Love to have a conversation.
Cool.
All right. Take care.
See you later.
Thank you once again, President Turpin. We will continue on with our agenda for this evening. Moving into our executive committee reports. Is there any members of the executive who wish to deliver a report? All right. We will begin with Mr. Rupka.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Hello, Council. So nice to see you all again. Congratulations to everyone that ran in elections. It's super exciting. Regardless of outcome, I hope you all learned a lot. Couple updates. So I've been spending most of my time doing budget stuff. I think we had like 26 hours of meetings with all the departments to go through each of their budgets to try to skim some pennies off the top and try to find some efficiencies, because although it is projected to be a deficit budget, given potential political horizons in the future, we're trying not for that to be the case, so we're just looking to be as efficient as possible with the funds that we have. So that's been tough, but you will probably see it on March 26th, so it's pretty exciting. We're making good progress. There's some advertisements for bar nights, karaoke, and trivia in French at CSJ, finally, heck yeah. And what else do we have? Oh, Executive Compensation Review Committee will be meeting, I think, the week after next for the first time, so that'll be good. And then finally, most of my time has been allocated to prepping transition for my successor as we wind down. So, yes, awesome. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President Rupka. Vice President Brown.
Hello, folks. Very glad to be back. Happy to be here. Just a couple things to touch on. I'm still getting through my emails, so if I haven't responded to an email you sent me, I'm about 108 left, so bear with me. Tomorrow I will be in a meeting with Cause Chair Andrew Beeman, with Deputy Premier and Minister of Health Sarah Hoffman, along with members of the Alberta Students Executive Council, which is the provincial College and Polytechnic Group, as well as ABGPAC, which is the Graduate Student Group. I think that we're not entirely sure what the full focus of the meeting is, but it'll surely be around, a large portion of it will surely be around mental health, which is very nice because tomorrow is also a big rally for mental health at 4:30, I believe. So I hope everybody can make it. I think it's really important that we do make ourselves very loud and clear about what we expect from mental health services, especially as we head into election season for the government. And just one other quick thing, I will be away most of next week in Halifax for CASA's annual general meeting conference. So if you need anything, shoot me a message. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. President Brown. Mr. President Banninger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's exciting to be back. I have a really couple busy weeks, I guess, going forward. This week, actually, I'm going to be speaking at the Festival of Undergraduate Research and Creative Activities, the FERCA Awards. Yeah, so I'm stoked to be there. I will be taking the incoming Vice President of Academic. For those of you who don't know, that is Joel Eggerwall, if that wasn't obvious enough. We're also going to be focusing a lot more on closing up the file for the Open Education Advocacy Group. So going forward, we're going to have transition into going into an election year, I guess, how to shift our priorities, how to shift the way that we talk about open educational resources to our university and to the greater community. And I think lastly, I'm just going to be focusing a lot on closing up any of the files. So very specifically, I'm going to be submitting the GovWeek Impact Report in the next couple days here, so I'll send it to you via email. And then the academic advising survey will also be closed, and we'll start working on a set of recommendations for the incoming executive team to work with. If you have any questions, feel free to ask me.
Thank you, President Banninger. President Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have also had a very busy few weeks, as I did a few people's jobs. So it was a good time. You can see my report for a few things, but to highlight, I do want to highlight one cool fact. We have now had every major political party leader within our own spaces on this campus. So Mr. Kenny was in Dewey's last Wednesday. I was there. I was tired at the time and continue to be tired today. In other words, it was a very interesting event. Please see my report or ask any questions if you have them. I do want to give a big congratulations to the Gateway for finally getting Mr. Kenny on record about Voluntary Student Union. Finally, the board is meeting this Friday. It is expected to be the budget is expected to come forward and to, in all honesty, likely to pass. The same increases increases to costs for students are within this budget, as I have been reporting this entire time. I continue to oppose the budget and will continue to oppose increases above inflation for students. And it's unfortunate to see, but it is within the university's 3-year targets that they put forward last year. It matches. So it's likely that again next year we will see much of the same. So heads up for all those coming in. Finally, myself and Vice President Brown will be headed to Halifax next week. We will be gone for almost 7 days straight, so if you do need anything from me, it's best to get in contact with me this week. The final big congratulations to everybody on campaigning, to everybody who was involved in elections, and a very big congratulations to all of those support, all those people who were volunteers, all those people who came out, all those people who were engaged, and all those people who make our elections great. So thank you so much for your involvement, folks. I know everybody here followed along in some way, shape, or form, I am sure. So thank you so much for your time and commitment to the University of Alberta Students Union.
Thank you, President Larson. Does anyone have a report from Vice President Bourgeois? No? All right. We'll move on to board and committee reports. Is there any member of the Aboriginal Relations and Reconciliation Committee who could deliver a report on behalf of Council of Sunday? Anybody? Okay. Councilor Belcourt, thank you very much.
Well, our last ARC meeting was last week, right? Yeah, last week we finished the recommendations, and now I think we're like almost completely done. I don't know. Yeah, we're done, and all the letters are in, so we're doing that. And we might be meeting this week, but I don't think so because we haven't heard back about the recommendations.
All right, thank you very much. Is there any member of Audit Committee who could deliver a report on behalf of Councillor Statt? Councillor Cunard.
Audit met once prior to or after election started. we are still continuing doing our FA and RA audits, and next meeting is TBD.
Thank you very much. Go to Councillor Kim for Bylaw Committee.
Hello. So bylaw committee also met before the election season, which was in February 13th, and we went over three main items. One of them is brought forward today, and Robert and Councillor Statt will be presenting it today. That is about the first principle of Bill 7, which is the changes that was recommended by Dai Board about who has the power to make changes to the standing order and things like that, which will be discussed later on. The other two items was the review of the second principles of Bill 5 for the translation committee, that is for the official translation into English, into French. This will not be presented in this meeting, but it will be brought forward for our next council meeting, along with second principles for SCU, student governance, oversight, second principles. Because we didn't have meetings due to many of our members in election season, we will be having our meeting on Friday, March 15th, 5 to 6 p.m., so this week Friday, and we'll be going over Bill number 6, second principles. We'll revisit Bylaw 6100 for DFU and second principles for Bill 7 if it passes today's council meeting. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Kim. Governor Flavin, Council Administration Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Council Admin met today at 5 here in this room. We discussed began going over the standing orders reviews. Didn't make it as far as I thought we would, so we may have to call another meeting between now and 2 weeks from now. And finally got some clarification on the reusable dishes. Turns out that contrary to the presentation we got, we do have to rinse our dishes, and that any unrinsed dish will result in a $10 fee. So as you're putting your dishes back, if you could do me a solid and rinse yours off before you put it back in the crate, so I'm not here till 11 doing it, that'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Flavin. President Larson for the Executive Committee.
Executive Committee met Monday. We discussed a number of topics. We did have to push a project allocation to this Thursday for the mental health rally, so no major decisions were made.
Thank you, President Larson. Vice President Ripka for Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee met 2 weeks ago where we had a presentation from the SU Awards Coordinator. For those of you that don't know, Finance Committee ultimately oversees the SU Awards as is written in our standing orders. So we just look at the types of awards that are given out, the process of adjudication and stuff. So they gave us an update on where they're at, strengths, weaknesses, things like that, any additional awards that are being added this year, as well as a couple of standing order changes, simply some changes to the adjudication process and members on that committee. Everything looks really good. I'm really excited. As soon as awards are announced, which is really, really soon, if not already, I'm trying to wrap my brain to this. March, which is coming out.
Yeah, right now also.
I think they were announced on Sunday. In any case, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share it on social media, and I want all y'all to share it on your social medias with your friends, because it's like money for free. That's awesome. So that'll be really good. Anyways, I digress. The other thing that we did is we looked at Bylaw 6100, which is the DFU bylaw, trying to make it a little more efficient for our partners. So those are good. Been forwarded onto Bylaw Committee. However, we also do need to get some first principles together for them. So yeah, we'll see what happens with that. But anyways, Bylaw 6100. That's done. Thanks.
Thank you, President Rupka. Does NOMCOM have a chair yet? So any member of NOMCOM? Vice President Banninger.
NOMCOM does not have a chair yet, but will be meeting soon to adjudicate applications for the Senate. And at that meeting, we will also find a chair for one meeting.
Thank you, Vice President Banninger. Councillor Rates left, I believe. Vice President Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This is from Councillor Rates. Policy Committee last met on today, right before the Students' Council meeting, to get back on our bi-weekly off-council meeting schedule. We will be meeting next week on Tuesday the 19th from 5 to 7 p.m. From this point, we will meet bi-weekly until the week prior to the final Students' Council meeting for this term. At today's meeting, we checked on the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusivity Policy, which will hopefully be seeing an updated version next week. We assessed the assessment and grading policy. VP Bhatnagar and Councillor Lay will be reviewing this more thoroughly. Not too many updates are anticipated. We hope to see a first reading ready version of this policy next week. We passed the second readings of the Campus Saint-Jean and food policies, and we briefly covered the status of the reconciliation policy, which is expected back to ARC once more before it comes to policy for review. If this policy is not completed before the end of the year, then we will ensure there is a strong handoff to next year's committee. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Mr. President Brown. Governor Flowin for the Board of Governors.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, as President Larson alluded to, the board is meeting this Friday in SAB 231 at 8 o'clock, and while all meetings of the board are important, this is probably the most important of the year. They're going to be making motions to approve the tuition fee, residence meal plan rates, and the budget. And I encourage everybody to come. Observers are welcome. They just ask that you give them a heads up so they make sure that seating is available. And if you're free this Friday, I recommend everybody to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Flamin. So any other members of boards or committees wish to deliver a report? Seeing none, we'll conclude board committee reports there. We'll move to open forum. Do our guests have any questions for members of council? All right. Thank you very much. We will then move into question period. Beginning with Councillor Kim.
I'll ask this question to President. So it's very interesting that you are telling us that this Friday, we will be having that BOG meeting again, which last year we knew it way beforehand, and we had a plan of like how to deliver our message and things like that. I know that you mentioned it's a 3-year plan, but we also know that the situation from last year is also different than this year with last year they assumed zero funding and they said it's not sufficient funding this year. But I'm not only talking about international tuition fee, but also about residence plan and also the meal plan. I know that it was a three-year projection, but I thought what would be more ideal situation is that we will work through it like part or more throughout the process and then provide more better case. Like, let's give an example. For international student fee, for example, we have increased number of international students, so we have extra money that I don't know if you know where it'll be used yet, but they said they haven't figured out where it'll be used yet, and yet they're increasing the fee again. So for all of these three main issues, I just wanted to hear what is your strategy this year, unlike last year? Or are you just planning to go through with it, assuming that, oh, it'll pass anyway and there's nothing we can do, kind of idea?
Thank you, Councillor Kim. Just like to remind Council, try and keep questions to 30 seconds or less. President Larson.
Thank you, Councillor Kim. As always, I have been extremely consistent in my defiance to these questions. The idea that we haven't raised these exact problems is false. We bring these up at every single opportunity, at every single budgeting session. Now, that does work in some instances. However, we continue to present the best case that we can. Ultimately, it is up to the university's board and its members to either listen to us or to not. I cannot force them to vote in any particular way. One of the more disappointing things that has been ongoing is that the other on-campus associations are now supporting the budget going forward. So it has been myself, Councillor Billick was at APC, as well as other students have been the only voices in opposition to this budget. So it has been a remarkably different scenario than last year, where we had all of the on-campus associations oppose the budget. This year we will likely be the only on-campus association to oppose the budget. Now, I also do want to say that we, aside from the budget, we have had other successes. We do have now legislated tuition. We do now know that international students after 2020 will have to have their entire cost of their education up front. We do know that a number of investments in mental health and other services related to students will be within this budget. So although it is not a good news story, and it is not something that is to be celebrated, there are things that are getting better over time. The one thing that I have been able to do, and those members of council who are on these committees with me, have been able to do is consistency. And I think that is probably our best bet going forward, is keeping that consistency in opposition to budgets that are above inflation.
Thank you, President Larson. We'll go to Councilor Lee.
Thank you. This one's for Vice President Ripka. I was wondering, since the Students' Union is running a deficit this year, and since there might be potential future storm clouds on the financial horizon, if you could just give us an idea of what sources the SU draws on to finance deficits, like if we're withdrawing from reserve funds or borrowing or anything like that, and giving us an idea of not just this year, but in future years, what the capacity of the SU to run deficits or the risk of the SU running deficits looks like.
Vice President Ripka.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question. Just to clarify, we are trying not to pass a deficit budget this year. It was projected from last year that we would, but we've been doing pretty well with all of our businesses this year, and we're just trying to change some margins on things, like a little bit of price changing to, I don't want to speak too businessy here, so as not to lose people, but like the cost of goods sold ratio to the price, trying to make our margins a little bit better. And then also we're going to just take a really hard look at like our events department to ensure that they're using their money wisely and in ways that benefit students. So we'll be able to make some savings there too. So like I said, we're really hoping that we can pass a budget that breaks even at least. But as for your second part of your question, we do have a lot of reserves, although they are dwindling as years go on. So we have different types of reserves, some of which are set aside for specific uses, some of which are more general. The more general one, we had about $1 million in, and then it's dwindling down to about half of that because of some of the campaigns that we've done this year, like Get Out the Vote and stuff. So we're hoping that we don't have to like dip too much into that. And then on the other hand, there's also reserves that we have that are tied up in investments. So those are less liquid. We can't exactly access them yet, but that's okay because they're there for the rainy days that are potentially ahead. So we are in really good financial standing as of right now. I think this is honestly a really good exercise for the SU to have to go through to make sure that they're being incredibly, or we are being incredibly financially accountable. So I hope that answered your question, and if you have any more, definitely do ask. Thanks.
Thank you, Vice President Ripka. Councilor Mawali.
My question is for President Larson. So just to provide clarification around what Kim was saying, I don't think she was saying that you have not done a lot this past year at all. You have done great, and like you've come back to us and told us like what the feedback was back and forth. The successes that you did list are from strategies from last year as well. So I think what we're trying to get at is like, what strategy is there for this one influential meeting that's upcoming? Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. President Larson.
As far as strategies go, I continue to do the same things that were done last year. We collect international student stories, we present them to the board, and we consistently and reliably give the exact same information that we can. Damning evidence is that every time international student tuition goes up, cost of living, every time international student tuition go up, the food bank sees a jump in its access. Presenting those facts and presenting those stories has been probably the closest we've come to success in ever defeating a budget. I will say that despite all of last year's efforts, despite protests, despite occupying rooms and everything else, the closest and only time we've ever actually defeated a motion was when Fahim Rahman very calmly, succinctly presented information. That was the singular time students have ever defeated a motion at the board. It was done by Fahim by basically repeatedly and succinctly putting forward business cases and stories that we knew would affect students. And that was the meal plan in 2016. For this particular particular meeting, as I said, I will say the exact same phrases I have said at the last six or seven meetings to ensure that that consistency is on record, that we don't flinch in the face of other arguments which are, well, no, we just need more money. It is very important that we keep that going and that every single Students' Union president and or BOG representative does the same. As far as strategy, other strategies, things that are important is shared. You yourselves and all their students sharing your stories and saying, hey, this affects me, and hey, the cost of education is becoming inaccessible to your average person, does more impact than I actually can have at that table. Governor Fleming is absolutely correct that if you have the ability to come on Friday, I do encourage it. It puts faces to the to what is happening. And that has been probably the best success that we've had.
Thank you, President Larson. Councilor Bilak.
Thank you very much. My question is for the chair of CAC, and I'm trying to commend you on this, but how awesome is it that council is using the Sustainable Dish Program, or the Reusable Dish Program?
Governor Flynn.
It's really awesome. so much so that somehow word got back to them, and in this most recent email, right down at the bottom, they are hinting that we, as I suggested, get our green spaces certification. I hope we can get that done this year, but that might be a little optimistic with only a month and a half left. But on a scale of 1 to 10, I would say this is an 11, especially considering that year after year we say we're going to do it, and we never do it. But now for, what, 3 or 4 meetings in a row now, we've actually had it, and we might actually be able to commit to doing this long term. I think it's great. It's and we wouldn't be able to do it without the program existing and sustaining SU. So shout out to the service and the volunteers for helping us use their service in our meetings.
Thank you, Refinement. Councilor Kim.
Thank you, Councillor Mugali, for explaining it. And I do know that President Larson has been working hard, bringing back, and I know that you're working hard in the book, but my question was, just like how you mentioned, going back to us not doing the best job informing students about the meeting that's happening in BOG this Friday. Even myself, who think is pretty involved enough, kind of, wasn't too aware of this, and so does many students that I know are passionate about issues regarding residence fee, meal plan, or international tuition fee, was not aware of these things. And for us to have consistency, I also agree that consistency is important, but by having consistency also means showing that students are still looking over this issue is also important. So I think for next year's president, it's something that she should also consider, but for upcoming Friday, I think maybe one of the only thing we can do now is maybe share more. But my actual question, sorry, Mr. Speaker, for being long, is that you mentioned that you've been working, the members of the board and staff are more in favor of the budget this year. Could you explain why for that?
President Larson.
From my understanding, so I can only talk to the explanation has been given from the Graduate Students Association. I can't speak to the other ones because I haven't had more of a wholesome enough conversations with them. The Graduate Student Association's president believes, has been voting against the tuition portions and against the rent increases, but votes in favor of the budget itself because they believe that the budget itself as a whole package is good. They also believe, or from my understanding, believe that they should be supportive of the new budget model, particularly the new long-term budgeting model. So they have been routinely voting in favor of the budget. I don't agree, obviously. I don't think 1 + 1 = 4. I think that 1 + 1 = 2 in these instances, and that the budget model is predicated on increasing student costs. So that, therefore, is not working for students. Those arguments probably hold true for the other associations as well. However, they have been far less vocal this year, and I cannot speak exactly to their thinking on these matters.
Thank you, President Larson. Councilor Motley.
My question is for Councilor Belcourt. I'm wondering if they forgot anything in their ARC report.
Councilor Belcourt.
Why, yes, I did. I forgot to mention that Michaela Mann, who deals with leadership and recognition in the Students Union, brought forward a position, mentioned that Students Union position that is a specialist in First Nations, Métis, and Inuit initiatives to our meeting. I think the job posting closed on Monday, and that Nathan Sunday will be sitting on it, on the hiring committee and the question development, or I don't know if it's a committee, but like doing all of that stuff on behalf of ARC. Thank you for your question.
Thank you very much. Any further questions? We have 1 minute left. Any further questions for members of council? President Larson.
My question is for Councillor Kim. Will she be attending on Friday, and will she be vocal as she was last year?
Councillor Kim.
I just added to do list, put a post about this, but 8 a.m.? Wow! I have work at 8 a.m. But I'll see if I'll be able to adjust my schedule, but wow, thanks. Oh, 8 a.m. I don't know if I could have voice at 8 a.m.
Thank you, Councillor Kids. As we have less than 30 seconds and I see no further questions on the board here, we will conclude question period there. Moving into boarding committee business with our item from the late editions. Councilor Bielak, seconded by Councilor Stapp, moved to approve the first principles of Bill Number 7, changes to student council standing orders amendment process. Councilor Bielak, would you like to introduce the motion?
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. So this bill comes out of a die board hearing that was brought up against council from Kalamanda regarding our the fact that we hadn't posted presentations online. So this was ultimately the recommendation from die board. They concluded that the problem was in the fact that the ability for us to update our standing orders is spread out very kind of, I guess, far, in the sense that both council, CAC, and ARC to an extent have the ability to amend it. And so the recommendation was make it more succinct, make it one place. And so that is this is us trying to do that. So essentially what this is we're going to amend Bylaw 100 to make it so that Students' Council is the only organization that can amend standing orders. But what happened in the case of CAC and ARC is that they will recommend changes to council, like a bulk package, for example, and then council will then approve those amendments. That way it's all in one place and it's a lot more accessible, so we know what's being changed and where. And then ideally we will not run into problems regarding not presenting or not posting presentations online or anything like that again. So nothing too crazy, but if you have questions, please let me know.
Thank you, Councilor Bielak. Now before debate, today with Councilor Sunday.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Chair of the Council Administration Committee. How does the Chair feel about these proposed changes?
Chair would like to respond, you can press his button.
No, I was gonna.
There's no one else on here.
Okay.
Governor Flannel.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm fine with it, to be honest. When I first started, I kind of thought it was weird to begin with that council had the ability to do that when no other committee can do that. Like, you wouldn't see Finance Committee unilaterally approving the budget or Bylaw Committee approving bylaws. So for both council and a committee of council to essentially be able to do the same thing, it didn't make any sense to me. So by bringing it in line with everybody else where council admin can recommend changes, but ultimately council has to ratify them, makes perfect sense to me.
Thank you, Governor Flannan. Any further debate on the item? But once, but twice. All right, seeing none, we'll move into voting on the item. Voting is now open. Those of you in the live stream, as usual, please send me any message with your vote. voting will close in 3, 2, 1. 17 in favor, 0 opposed, 0 abstention. Motion carries. All right, we'll move on to our last item for this evening. To conclude the board committee, let's move to general orders. President Larson moves to ratify the 2019 strategic plan as listed. Is there a second for this motion? Governor Flamin. President Larson, would you like to introduce the motion?
I would.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To be very brief, the strategic plan, I came to council, I gave a presentation, we took it for another round of internal feedback. We had a couple of changes, but nothing too outrageous. We also combined a couple of points that were redundant. This plan, the one that is in front of you, is represents the consensus from the strategic plan working committee. So basically every single member of the working committee came to consensus on the entirety of the document, which is really cool to see. Again, it is the combination of about 6 months work from the committee, and I really do want to thank everybody for their input. It is actually one whole council meeting early because we did work during the elections period. Our committee could make more, so we kept working. And we got this completed early to allow for as much debate as possible or as necessary for council to go over. Finally, this to ratify the strategic plan, we do need 2/3 majority vote within council. So if you know that you are going to be in opposition, please be vocal because I will literally count the votes. And we do have still quite a bit of time to send this back to committee if there's something to be reviewed. However, again, it does represent consensus from the writing committee. I do want to thank them all for their effort, and I'm looking very much forward to the debate around the strategic plan.
Thank you, President Larson. We'll begin debate with Councillor Sunday.
So for this motion, I'd like to call for division. Right, that's what we
call it when we go to vote.
Sure. I also have a question for President Larson. How many student groups were consulted by this working group committee?
Vice President Ripken.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would just like to speak in favor of this motion. Being part of the Strategic Planning Committee was a really excellent vantage point, I suppose, of the Students' Union. This is a very important document that not only will guide the departments on their endeavors to reach their goals, but also hopefully inspire future candidates of the executive and even counselors, so that's very exciting. An overarching theme that we found when planning was kind of what I talked about when we were passing budget principles, this idea of constantly wanting to grow and add things to this organization, but then you run into the problem of bloat, where there are so many departments and you're kind of like, are they as good as they could be? So we've taken a step back and looked at them, tried to make sure that every single part is very, very strong. We also incorporated a lot of equity, diversity, and inclusion stuff into it, with the inclusion being trying to reduce barriers to entry to the SU on all levels. And finally, kind of being in the headspace and the context of potential voluntary students' unionism, I think that gave us a very unique perspective to try to ensure that all of our operations are self-sustaining, if not overly so, to be beneficial to the services that they fund also, which again is a good thought exercise to ensure that the burden is not always on students and fees, and instead on the success of the businesses and stuff like that. So overall, I think it's an incredible plan, and I hope to hear a lot of feedback. Thanks.
President Ripken. Is there any further debate on this motion? Councilor Bilak.
Well, I know what's next. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would also like to speak very, very strongly in favor of the strategic plan. I have the privilege of sitting on the Strat Plan Committee, where we poured many, many hours into this document, and I'm very, very proud of how it turned out. I think it's a great document that will lead the SU into its future. I just want to give a big shout out to the committee and to President Larson for leading us on this path, and all. If there is more debate, I'll try and supplement any questions that I can answer, but besides that, it was a privilege being on the committee, so thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Bilak. Is there any further debate on the item? President Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To answer the what student groups were consulted question, the way that we went about, I would say, well, one, we did consult all of our internal departments, so every single manager has seen a review, has reviewed this item, so about 14 members there. The way that we approached, I would say, I'm guessing when the member asked about student groups, they mean like student groups on campus, I believe?
Yeah, they're part of the CG.
Okay, yeah, so the way that we more or less approached that was asking each one of the writers or the members to represent their community and to ask if they saw any feedback that was necessary. That included, so counselors, that included staff, student staff, the managers, as well as an Indigenous student at large. So we asked if they, we basically asked those members to do their level of consultation they felt necessary on whatever item they may have been discussing or debating. We didn't do, as I would say, like a huge, massive consultation room because this is more or less an internally facing document to give us direction and to give the Students' Union direction, and it wanted to be written by that committee, not necessarily by a greater force at large. Finally, there was the public feedback period for about a month. It was fired off to a number of stakeholders and we got feedback on that, which turned out pretty well. Overall, I would say that the representation of the committee, of the time that we took to do all of this work, as well as the opportunity from comment from this group and from the community at large, represents a very significant amount of boots on ground or time allowing for comment.
Thank you, President Larson. Any further debate again? Councilor Sunday.
So I hope this is taken as friendly, but I'm to amend the document. Unfortunately, I do not see page numbers on this document, but where it says work in partnership with First Nations, Métis, and Inuit students, there should be an accent over the E for Métis.
So is that to amend both to add page numbers and add the accent, or just one of those two things?
I like page numbers, but if that's not taken as friendly.
President Larson, are one or both of those things taken as friendly?
They will both be taken as friendly. Thank you very much for catching that. I do also want to iterate that this is the wording, like this is just the wording that will, is going to be into the document. This will still have a marketed version, so marketing will take all of this and make it pretty. I just didn't want us to get ahead of ourselves and pass something that hadn't already had to had council's ratification.
Any further debate on the end? Going once. Going twice. All right, we'll close debate there. Moving to voting on the item. Councillor Sunday, did you have something you'd like to say?
Yeah, I'd like to call for division.
Councillor Sunday calls for division. So as with the previous time we did this, those of you who know this before, I will go through and call your name. When I call your name, you can respond to the affirmative by saying yes or aye. Respond to the negative by saying no. President Larson.
Yes.
Vice President Batner.
Yes.
Vice President Brown.
Yes.
Vice President Ripka.
Yes.
Okay. Governor Flamin.
Aye.
Councilor Lynn.
Yeah.
Councilor Anderson.
Yeah.
Councilor Ritz is no longer here. Councilor Mulally.
Aye.
Councilor Hussaini is not here. Councilor Bilak.
Yeah.
Councilor Cutter.
Yeah.
Councilor Lee.
Aye.
Councilor Hussaini.
Yes.
Councillor Stat is not here. Councillor C is not here. Councillor Ansari in the live stream. Hopefully Councillor Ansari is here. Doesn't appear to be writing anything. We'll take that as not here. Councillor Yap.
Here.
Yes.
Is Councilor Rosalind here? No. Councilor Bose?
Yes.
Councilor Adwan, is he here? Councilor Hanasek is not here. Councilor Chung is not here. Councilor Ahmad? Yes, this is for, are you in favor or not in favor of the item at hand? Councilor Ahmad? It's not, this is not for attendance, Councilor Ahmad. This is for, we're doing call and decision on the item that we were just debating. So you can respond publicly with a yes or a no with your vote.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
Can we use this vote as attendance so that we don't have to do this again?
Sure. And that's a yes from Councilor Ahmad. Councilor Nian is not here. Councilor Azuki is a yes. Proxy for Councilor Hiddush.
We.
Councilor Kim. Councilor DePinto.
Yes.
Councilor Agarwal.
Yes.
Councilor Rizvi is not here. Councilor Bruce.
Yes.
Councilor Belcourt.
Yes.
Item passes unanimously. And with that, is there any items
from the order?
Yes.
I did not get to vote.
Oh, that's because I put this in the wrong spot. Councillor Sunday, my apologies.
Yes.
I will regavel. And with that, is there any items from the floor? I will use that vote for our attendance meeting adjourned at 7:01 p.m.
One hour and 22 minutes.